This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Adeline Chung, and you're listening to Stylefile, where we stay on the pulse with what's brewing in the fashion industry. Now, this week, we talked to Charles C. Rosario, Senior Vice President of Lazard Kaplan International, the manufacturer of Lazard diamonds.
So a round, ideal cut diamond is absolutely the most beautiful and the most brilliant diamond that you can ever find in the world today.
After that, I have Florence Song, style lead at Zalora, talk about yet another fall trend that has found its way to Malaysia, Chelsea boots.
On the boot stripe spectrum, it's one of the easier styles to kind of wear over here compared to, like, you know, the lace-up combat boot.
But before we get to that, I have Othniel Ting with me here in the studio, and we're going to go over some fashion headlines. Despite Cardi B and Nicki Minaj dispute, and I believe it's finally over. Oh, thank God. Well, nothing is stopping Cardi B from anything. So Cardi B has inked an endorsement deal with Reebok. She has been brought on board to promote the sportswear giant's Astrak trainer and, you know, some selecting clothings, you know, which has already begun to populate her Instagram feed.
Yeah, so this Astrak sneaker is, I think, from the 90s, and she's resurrecting it. And it's a silhouette that retails for about 100 USD, and it falls in line with, you know, the dad sneaker trend. But I think this is actually a sneaker that dads would actually wear, you know.
What do you think that, you know, those kind of sneakers are, you know, super in trend right now?
I guess, you know, brands sometimes they need to follow to keep up with the trends, I guess. So I think in keeping up with the dad sneaker trend that higher fashion brands have been doing, I think Reebok is just looking into their archives and bringing back a design that they used to have last time. And
quite a lot of designers are actually doing that at the moment, you know. But you know what? According to Reebok, they say that, you know, everything you love about Cardi B is what you love about Reebok. You know, the brand has a long-standing legacy of non-conformity. You know, whether it's creating the first workout shoe exclusively for women, or, you know, putting bold-faced expletives, you know, and fresh-faced hip-hop stars, you know, and its big ad campaigns in the early noughties. So over the past years, Reebok has signed ambassadors, you know, who are reflective of its growing female customer base. You know, Jay-Z, Pharrell, Missy Elliott, you know, and even Victoria Beckham.
Yeah, so I think in the past, brands and, you know, fashion brands were a bit reluctant to partner up with hip-hop artists. Like, I think Burberry was a bit pissed off at Ja Rule when he wore a Burberry hat in his music video. And Reebok was actually the first brand to partner up with hip-hop artists, like you mentioned, Jay-Z, Pharrell, Future, and even Allen Iverson in the hip-hop, in the basketball world. So they are always trying to look out for people that are different. But, you know, to be very honest with you, I don't think Cardi B is that fashionable. So, but
well, she can be sooner or later.
She can be, yeah. But, you know, she's not the first person that comes to mind when you think of, you know, fashionable people. But I'm proven wrong, like, actually, because she's one of the most bankable female artists of our time. Because when Cardi B rapped about Louboutins in her song Bodak Yellow, her search interest for the luxury label increased by 217%.
See, there you go. There you go.
Bankable.
So, I mean, when it comes to fashion, you know, who comes to mind?
Well, if you look at the people that Reebok is collaborating with, you know, Victoria Beckham definitely is, even though she used to be in Spice Girls, but, you know, she has at least she has been doing some fashion related things. But then you know, Cardi B, I think she's just she released a lipstick with signature lipstick with Tom Ford.
That's
and
right.
Then she has a collection with Steve Madden as well, and as well as Fashion Nova. You know, if you're a follower of Cardi B's Instagram, I'm sure you've heard of that brand.
But you know, I feel that, you know, for Victoria Beckham, as you mentioned earlier, if it's not because of Shaquille O'Neal, right, I would not think of her collaborating with Reebok. You know, I mean, Reebok and Victoria Beckham, I don't really see the resemblance, actually.
Yeah, but I think it's just the trend these days with brands. You know, they are relying on, you know, the celebrity power and celebrity name to you know, bring in more sales. And it's owned, Reebok is owned by Adidas anyway, right? So I guess they are following Adidas' technique of collaborating with artists.
It's all about collaboration at the moment, right?
Yep.
I mean, even Cardi B seems she has tied up with about three brands. So earlier this year, she announced a partnership with Steve Madden, and the fruits of her clothing collaboration with Fashion Nova. You know, again, fashion brand, you know, chose Cardi B to be part of it. You know, that will be sometime, you know, launching sometime this month. And then, and now, Reebok, you know. So let's see what's next, you know, what are the collaborations. And now, you know, moving on to the next story. When five become four. Sounds familiar. I'm not very good at singing, but yeah. The Spice Girls are back, you know. They have announced a reunion tour, but Victoria Beckham will not be included in the comeback plans, sadly.
Yeah, a lot of people have been saying that it wouldn't make a difference because they can't hear her sing anyway.
Really?
I mean, I can't disagree with that, lah.
Well, you can't hear her sing, you can't see her smile, what else?
I mean, when you think of a singer, normally you're like, okay, like Ariana Grande. Oh yeah, I can imagine her voice and singing.
That's
voice
because it's just one person. Spice Girls is supposed to be five, right?
But, you know, her voice, you know, it doesn't really shine for me, lah. I mean, like, don't hate on me, lah. But it, you know, her voice, singing voice, like.
Anyway, you know what? So Victoria could not attend to the six UK stadium dates that was chosen by the Spice Girls due to business commitments. So she said that being in the Spice Girls was a hugely important part of her life, and she wished that, you know, her girls so much love and fun as, you know, they go back on tour, and she know that, you know, they will put on an amazing show, and that the fantastic fans past and even present, if there's any, are going to have a wonderful time, definitely. So the Spice Girls last performed together back in 2012 during the Olympics closing ceremony, but you know, they have not toured as a band since 2008. You know, quite some time. Do you think they can sing still?
I think there was no problem, but you know, if I were to just being real, it sounds like the other members need a reunion tour to, you know, get some money a bit, but Victoria Beckham doesn't need that extra cash. It sounds that way to me, lah. You know what I mean? Normally, when old 90s groups and stuff, they do reunion tours, normally it's because they need some money.
Yeah, I totally agree.
You know, do the random Saudi prince birthday performance here and there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe a famous person, a famous Malaysian couple wedding, you know, for a boy band that was here not too long ago.
But you know what? Nevertheless, you know, those Spice Girls has, you know, long gone. You know, people may not remember Spice Girls, or people may remember Spice Girls. However, but their dressing, the fashion, Spice Girls fashion stays put till today, you know. 90s nostalgia, you know, has long been in fashion. You know, Buffalo trainers are back at Browns. Kylie's latte lip liner hardly stays in stock. You know, cycling shorts, which we mentioned, you know, past few weeks, you know, cycling shorts and bum bags, you know, are everywhere, you know. But the direct recreation, you know, of their respective aesthetics, you know, isn't particularly appealing to, you know, even the staunchest fans. So for example, for Mel B, we call her she's the scary Spice. You know, Scary Spice had a particular proclivity for baring her breasts, you know, at any conceivable opportunity. You know, slow slung leopard print onesies, you know, which is in trend at the moment, leather jackets without a top underneath, leopard print lingerie worn as outerwear.
Trying to scare other people.
I know.
Beauty.
But it's more of a wild side for Scary Spice, I would say. You know, as for Sporty Spice, you know, the name says it all. Sporty, right? So I would call it, you know, the other Spice Girls, you know, who ought to feel particularly at ease for autumn winter 2018. Sporty Spice, you know, after all, luxe athleisure, you know, has become a staple component, you know, in contemporary wardrobes, and a tracksuit, you know, has been decreed, you know, acceptable for nearly every occasion, but obviously not for formal occasion, but any other occasion. And then moving on to Posh Spice. If anyone knows how to transform black bodycon into something, you know, resolutely contemporary, it's definitely The Row, which is the brand's, I mean, the brand's ruched, you know, off-shoulder dresses are the perfect modern manifestation, you know, of a victorious 90s favorite. It's all black heels, black bags, mini purse. We're talking about sleek straightened hair, we're talking about short mini bodycon dress. I think hers is the safest outfit compared to all.
Posh, right?
Yeah, posh and, you know, elegant at the same time.
You never smile.
Yeah, never smile. And you know what? The next is ginger spice. I think a lot of people love ginger spice as well. To me, it's all about the glitz and glam for ginger. 2018 ginger spice need look no further than, you know, helping for an update on high octane glamour. Fashion's new darling offers sequins galore, you know, but, you know, cut for fresh kind of appeal. You know, she's all about simple yet elegant at the same time as well, and your ginger hair all the way.
Yeah, so I guess it'll be exciting to see what kind of clothes they would like wear for their reunion tour, right?
Yeah, and you know what, finally we have the youngest, I would say, which is Baby Spice, which is everybody's favorite. She's the cutest and she's the softest. It's all about pastel colors for her. During a time, you know, when girlishness, you know, has been reclaimed as a political statement, and millennial pink shows no sign of waning. You know, Baby Spice style takes on a whole new meaning, and today shrimps beaded back are in trend. Now it seems like we all can dress up as Spice Girls, you know, with the current trend, with the ongoing current trend, I would say. It's all about 90s, it's all about feistiness, leopard prints, pastel colors, as well as glitz and glamour sequins as well, and black bodycon dress.
90s is in.
That's all the news we have for you this week. Stay tuned, because coming up next, I speak to Chelsea Rosario of Lazar Diamonds. BFM 89.9, it's Adeline Chung on Style File. We just wrapped up the headlines and it's time for our star maker for this week, Chelsea Rosario of Lazar Diamonds. With a legacy spanning over 120 years, Lazar Diamonds have been trademarked as the world's most beautiful diamonds. Founded by Lazar Kaplan in 1903, they're the pioneers behind the world-famous Ideal Cut, manufactured according to carefully selected measurements and angles. They've had a profound influence on the fashion industry, teaming up with jewelry companies and turning their magnificent diamonds into wearable items. But what is Ideal Cut? And how can more people understand the art behind cutting diamonds? In conjunction with his recent visit to Malaysia, organized by DGEM, Lazar Diamonds authorized jeweler in Malaysia, I'm lucky enough to be able to meet Chelsea Rosario as he joins us on the show to walk us through everything we need to know about diamonds. How did you get into diamond cutting, and why did you decide to pursue it as a career?
It's very interesting, but I actually went to college to start studying to be an accountant. And it wasn't working out so well, so I had to get a job. I happened to get very lucky, and I answered an ad in the New York Times, and the job was to be an inventory clerk, but they didn't tell me the kind of company that it was because of security. Mm-hmm. So after passing the security test, they bring me to a desk in a very tall office building, and they put a box in front of me, and they tell me, these are diamonds. And now you have to take the diamonds and record them for inventory purposes. I didn't know it was the diamond company until that moment. It just so happens that I was surrounded by very, very open-minded people that helped me learn the business. And I didn't know this, but I have a very natural talent to inspect diamonds, evaluate diamonds. It made sense to me. To me, it was like learning a second language overnight. And so I was lucky that the Lazar Kaplan family promoted me on several occasions to just learn more. They sent me to the Gemological Institute of America to take training classes. They also had a factory in Puerto Rico in the Caribbean where they polished diamonds. They sent me to their factory to learn how to polish diamonds. Mm-hmm. So I would happen to be just really in the right place at the right time with great people, and I created in my own heart a love and a space for diamonds. And not only diamonds, but the world's most beautiful diamonds. They have to be special, because diamonds deserve the treatment to actually be promoted as the best, most valuable gem that actually exists in the world.
I mean, for yourself, you know, usually men, they're not really interested in diamonds, you know. For you, did you fall in love with diamonds before or maybe after?
It was after they showed me the difference between the Lazar diamond and every other diamond.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could see it. And once you can see it, you get to appreciate it. Then they taught me the details. What makes it count? What makes it so much fire and sparkle? And that was exciting. It's still exciting to me. Today, after 45 years, it's still exciting to work with the Lazar Diamond.
Now, you've been in Lazar Diamonds for 40 over years.
Yes.
Give us an overview of Lazar's history. So how did it come to a point of, you know, being the world's biggest diamond cutting company?
Well, we're not necessarily the biggest. We like to think of ourselves as being the best, where value is more important than overall size. Mr. Lazar Kaplan, back in 1917, cut a Lazar ideal cut diamond based on angles and proportions using math and science to manipulate the light inside of a diamond. When he did that, he found that the diamonds had a tremendous sparkle, much better than any sparkle or any fire or brilliance that any of the diamonds before that time had ever achieved. And he decided to change his company to only produce this quality of cut of diamond.
Mm-hmm.
And so that goes all the way back to 1917. Now, the company since then has maintained the same formula for cutting. I like to say it in terms of practicality. We got it right the first time, okay? And we've been doing it ever since.
And, you know, diamond cutting seems very difficult to get into, considering, you know, how niche is it, it is. And how strong of an association, you know, it has to luxury. So what's the learning curve, you know, like for learning how to cut diamonds properly?
Okay. Well, the most important aspect of it is to be manually dexterous, to have an ability to interpret with your hands and your eyes, okay, the minuscule differences of how to polish every single facet, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It takes minimum 6 months of training before a diamond cutter actually gets evaluated as someone who's worth investing more time. After 6 months, if you can't cut it, you have to move on to a different craft. This has to be something that's in your blood. It's in your heart. And the way that we've always promoted it is through family associations. So once we wind up with a really well-established diamond cutter, we promote him to bring his children to learn the craft.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a craft that is handed down from generations to generations with pride, dignity, and incredible precision.
So how do you cut a diamond? Can you walk me through the process?
Sure. Well, first off, is diamond is the hardest natural substance known to man. The only thing that can cut a diamond is another diamond. So the way that we actually cut and polish diamonds is using diamond dust. So we take the diamonds and we take industrial diamonds. We grind it down into very, very fine dust. We mix that with a little bit of oil. We put it on a rotating wheel. The wheel spins around in circular fashion about 3,000 revolutions per minute, okay? And now what you do is you take the rough, uncut diamond and you hold it in very technical equipment and you press it down on the spinning wheel facet by facet. And what you do is you're grinding away the surface of the diamond. But it's not the wheel that's cutting the diamond. It's the diamond dust on the wheel. And you have to do this over and over and over on a repetitive fashion so that you take something that looks like a pebble and turn it into a gem. And with Lazar, we do it and we measure every single facet at every single stage. There are 58 facets on the diamond, okay? Now, you can use machinery with diamond powder, okay, to cut down the big sections. But to finish it to the Lazar quality, it has to be finished by a human being, by a craftsman, by a master cutting diamond producer. So that has to be, it's a human touch that makes the difference at Lazar. Because if you can just think about how easy it could be to mess up just trying to press a diamond on a wheel. So, and with the precision that we go after, it's why it takes such a long time to train a diamond cutter to actually be a master cutter.
But that must be a very, very precise, you know, handcraft work, right?
Incredible. It's why we like to show off our diamonds on a microscope, because we can show you the level of precision that it takes to get to those really, really fine facet angles and combinations and facet junctions. And every single facet is done with a very precise purpose to reflect and refract the light so that the light comes up to the top of the diamond and you get that fire and brilliance on a consistent basis.
So you have a lot of diamond cutters, and have they, you know, made any like tiny little mistakes on cutting the diamonds?
Well, interesting, because of the pride that our diamond cutters put into their work, okay, we actually do things in a specific flow of work. For example, the bottom of the diamond gets cut by the same people all the time. So they specialize in that part of the diamond. Then it goes to another set of diamond cutters who cut the top of the diamond. Now, when the guys go from the bottom to the top, the guys in the top, the first thing they do is they have to inspect the work of the guy in the bottom. Because if it's not perfect, he can't do his work well. So what it comes out to is that every single one of our diamond cutters is a diamond supervisor for quality control.
Wow, so each and every part is done by different people.
Exactly. But because they do such specific work and it has to be done with such precision, okay, that they do sections, and you can't move from one section to the other unless the previous section is done perfectly. So that every one of our diamond polishers is a quality control manager. And that's how we achieve the final world's most beautiful diamond, because everyone takes responsibility for their section to be absolutely perfect.
Well, that's amazing.
It's a lot of fun.
So what's the ideal diamond cut to you?
Okay, the ideal cut is a round diamond, okay, that you can actually perform with very specific angles and proportions so that you get a circular reflection in the diamond. Okay, that gives you a tremendous amount of sparkle and brilliance back to your eye, no matter the source of light. So a round, ideal cut diamond is absolutely the most beautiful and the most brilliant diamond that you can ever find in the world today.
Now, can you describe what the diamond market is like now? You know, I mean, is it like the stereotype suggests, you know, driven by the upper class? Or has it found ways to break into the everyday consumer market?
One of the amazing things about the Lazar diamond, because it's done by math and science and angles and proportions, you can actually move up and down the quality chain. As long as you maintain the Lazar diamond cut, all our Lazar diamonds from 18 points to the very largest that could be a 30-carat diamond all have the same angles and proportions. So on the basis of the size of the diamond, you can actually get the same brilliance. So that what we do is we cross over different categories of luxury purchases so that we can actually have your working consumers, okay, buy a Lazar diamond where they know they can get the absolute best cut at a price point that they can afford. And then we go up the chain to the very largest, most impressive diamonds. So we can sell a 10-carat diamond for $1 million, and it has the same angles and proportions and the same beauty. So what we've done is we've allowed all consumers at every stage of buying luxury jewelry items to be able to afford the best, because you can mix and match the different quality characteristics as long as you stay to the ideal cut. Right? Then you actually have the world's most beautiful diamond, and it's a category where all consumers can say, I actually own the best.
Now, let's talk a bit about Lazar's legacy. Okay, they've been cutting diamonds for over 120 years.
Yes.
Over this period, you know, what impact has it had on the market and jewelry companies?
Interesting enough is that when Lazar, back in 1917, produced the original ideal cut diamond, he was ahead of his time. Okay, it took the diamond industry about 30 years to recognize and catch up to the concept of beauty in cutting, okay? He was the guy that actually changed the paradigm from weight to beauty. Now, that's the impact we've had on the diamond industry. Today, people all over the world talk about ideal cut because of Mr. Lazar. And because we've always stuck to the original ideal, people recognize that consumers will pay more for beauty. So almost all diamond cutters today are trying to cut diamonds not just for size. They want to add an element of beauty, which means they want to copy what we do. So we've had a tremendous impact on the diamond industry. Today, the reason that almost all diamond cutters want to talk about the beauty of cut is because of Mr. Lazar Kaplan. So his legacy, frankly, is the idea of changing the value proposition from the weight of the diamond to how beautiful it is cut.
So has any other jewelry companies, you know, like you mentioned, they try to copy Lazar diamonds.
Yes.
So has any other companies tried to copy exactly like what you guys have
Not
done?
On a consistent basis. Mm-hmm. We do on purpose. It's our goal. It's what we live for, okay? Another diamond company will come up, because it's a mathematical formula, they can actually come up with similar measurements, okay? But not on a consistent basis. And we publish all of our parameters. So when I tell you that the table, for example, as a measurement, is between 53% and 57%, it's all Lazar diamonds.
Right.
Another company may have a range between 50% and 63%, which is a much bigger category. Now, if they come up with one that's 53% to 57%, it could look like a Lazar.
Mm-hmm.
But because Lazar is so consistent, all of ours fall into that ideal cut parameters. And it's possible that the competition can come up with something similar, but not on a consistent basis.
After the break, I speak to Charles Sirozaru more about diamond cutting and how to choose a good diamond. This is Stylefile, and I'm Adeline Cheung on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I'm Adeline Chung on Stylefile. Now, earlier on, we spoke about Lazar's inception and how we came to a point of being the world's best diamond cutting company. And now, Chelsea Rosario tells us more about the art of cutting diamonds. Correct me if I'm wrong, you know, but aren't differences between diamonds very subtle? You know, how can consumers, you know, people who aren't too well versed like myself in the art of diamond cutting, identify a good diamond?
Okay. Well, first off, is the best thing you can do is ask questions. Okay. And a jeweler who is actually very proud of what they do and the cut that they provide you with will give you details of information that you can actually compare. Okay? So you can look for the measurements of the diamonds. Okay? You can understand, you could do your own research and look for the phrase of ideal cut and find out what it means and what those parameters are. If a jeweler does not talk to you about the details, then get out of there really fast because it's something. Put it this way. When you have a newborn baby, you show it off to everybody because you're proud, okay? You know, and if not, you just hide them in a closet, you know? So if you're proud of it, you talk about it. So if a jeweler is not talking about cut as a primary characteristic, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
With the Lazar diamond, besides the idea that it has the most intense sparkle and fire, which you can actually see, the way to know is to compare it to any other diamond. When you put them side by side, the Lazar will outshine every other diamond. So you can physically see the difference yourself. Also, we have a unique laser inscription serial number on every Lazar diamond with the Lazar logo. So that the way to know that you're dealing with the original ideal Lazar is you can actually look at the diamond and find your individual specific serial number that is yours forever.
Now, I want to know, where do you source your diamonds? You know, there's always been this controversial narrative, you know, where the West supposedly steals diamonds from poorer African nations and profits off it. Now, while depriving the home country of that wealth, you know, so how do you respond to this problem?
It's actually something that we're very proud of. We have always presented ourselves as the good guys in the diamond industry. And every country that we actually work with as a source of diamonds, for example, Botswana, South Africa, and Namibia, we've actually not only worked with them to use their diamonds for our Lazar diamond product, we've actually opened factories in those countries. And today, a major source of our diamonds come from Namibia. And we work with the government of Namibia. We have a factory in Namibia that is 50% owned by Lazar, and 50% that's owned by the country and the government of Namibia. Now, we get our diamonds from a bona fide source where we can tell you where all of our diamonds come from, right? We also reinvest in those countries. So we always think of ourselves as the good guys in the diamond industry, where we want to use the word beneficiation, where we not only buy their diamonds, and then we actually train their workers their own workers, Namibian workers, polished the Lazar diamond. So the diamonds come from Namibia. They're produced in the factory in Namibia. We provide employment to Namibians. We do the training. We show them how to do it. And then we actually export it to New York and we distribute it around the world. So we like the idea of always talking about sourcing as a very positive aspect of what we do, because we reinvest in the natural countries where we actually get our diamonds from.
Now, for some more general knowledge, you know, what are the differences between lab-grown diamonds and natural diamonds? You know, which one would you say is more appropriate for the fashion industry?
I would say it actually comes out to be something very simple. If you love somebody, do you love them synthetically? You know, do you love them in a natural world? You know, we all love them in the real world. That's the difference between diamonds. Okay. If you're going to take a synthetic diamond, in my mind, you might as well get a piece of glass, you know, or you could use a cubic zirconia. Mm-hmm. You know, a natural diamond has magic. It has history. It has symbolization. It has value that's over time always shown to increase. All right. Now, the synthetic diamond is an aesthetically pleasing, different form of a gem, but at the very low quality end of pricing. Okay. Mm-hmm. It also does not have a resale value today. The price of synthetic diamonds is consistently going down, so they're cheaper to get. Okay. And again, you know, look at it in terms of the positive effect. I like to ask consumers, particularly the guys, when a woman is going to get married, how much do you love her? Okay. Do you love her enough to give her a real diamond? Or are you skimping, okay? It's kind of like when someone asks, what kind of diamond is that? Does a woman really want to say it's a synthetic? You know, is it a man-made diamond? No, they want to tell you, they want to show off. And it's why natural diamonds will always maintain their value and their place in the luxury market, because people want to walk around with them with pride.
Now, I use that last question to segue into a design-related questions. Yeah, since this is a fashion podcast, some of your diamonds are obviously later incorporated into jewelry. So what do diamonds add to jewelry that other minerals or, you know, jewels don't?
Well, the consistency of the Lazar cut allows you to do a lot of different designs, because all of the diamonds have the same sparkle and fire. So, for example, in a bracelet, if you have 30 diamonds in the bracelet, you don't want to have one dark, one light, one flashy, one, you know, sparkly. So the consistency, they all have the same fire and reflection of the white light coming up in a blaze of color and, you know, sparkle. So the consistency allows the designer to actually make different types of jewelry where they can do multiple stones in the same piece, all with the same brilliance. Also, the diamond is the hero, because the diamond, basically in any piece of diamond jewelry, the diamond is the most valuable part of the piece. So you can actually highlight the diamond, whether it's a pair of earrings, because one of the famous pieces style-wise internationally is a pair of studs. And in the studs, what do you want to see? You want to see the diamond.
And the fire.
Exactly. You want to see that. You want to have, we've had experiences where people walk across a room to look at someone's earrings because the light hit them in the eyes. And so the sparkle, the brilliance, the consistency of the Lazar diamond cut allows for different types of fashion jewelry, for bridal, for all types of different designs. And we work with the gem in terms of the design aspects, so that we try to make in Malaysia jewelry that is actually specific to the Malaysian market. So we work with Dejem very, very closely on our jewelry designs, and we focus, and they focus, on promoting the Lazar diamond, because it is the world's most beautiful diamond. You want to put it in the world's most beautiful jewelry as well.
That's right. Now, the fashion and jewelry industry is driven by trends, you know, and people's ever-changing taste. Now, is this the case in the diamond market too? I mean, what are the biggest trends, you know, when it comes to diamonds?
Okay, actually, trends are really important, but trends are actually cultural. And it, for example, you know, the United States, the market there is a main source for design.
Right.
And so what happens a lot of times is that we will create designs in the U.S. and then adapt them to the different this cultures and the different countries that we work in. So we will take some of the important designers from the United States, mm-hmm. and we'll sit down with the local designers in Dijem and see how do we adapt those designs to the local economy, in the local markets, to the local stylings. We also have local designers in Malaysia, mm-hmm. that actually are helping us pick up what the trends are, so that we're actually producing trend fashion jewelry throughout the country, based on the feedback that we get from the consumers here in Malaysia.
Now, talking about partnership earlier on, you know, so in Malaysia, Lazada partnered up with Dijem for distribution. So how did this partnership come to into fruition, you know? Why Dijem?
Okay, well, Lazada, we are an international company, okay? Mm-hmm. A good example is we've been in Japan for over 35 years,
right.
Okay? We have distribution in Canada and Mexico, Taiwan, Singapore. So we are an international company. And our base in Southeast Asia is in Hong Kong, where Ms. Laura Chow, who runs our division for Southeast Asia, is responsible for finding us good partners.
Mm-hmm.
So she had done research. She's met with the management team of Dijem, and we had a lot of synergy. You know, we had great partnerships, the conversations and stylings, and the things that we find as valuable, they found as valuable. So it was a combination of her interviewing Dijem and Dijem interviewing Lazada, looking for a unique product that was going to separate them from the crowd here in Malaysia. So it was a combination of both parties looking for the correct partner with the right synergy to promote a very, very high-end fashion and bridal jewelry line. And Dijem was perfect for us, and we are, so far, we like the idea of thinking that we're perfect for them.
But what's the future of this partnership like?
Well, it's ever-expanding. I've been to here to KL, now probably about 10 years in a row. And every year we are coming up with different programs, expanding our distribution, expanding our stylings, and our office in Hong Kong through Laura Chow makes several trips all during the years to do staff training, to do research and feedback, to work on new designs. So we expect that the business in Dijem will continue to grow, because it's in both of our interests to present a unique product to the Malaysian population.
So how has this partnership been faring for Lazada? You know, have you noticed anything different about the jewelry market in Malaysia compared to other parts of the world?
Yes, it's actually incredibly interesting. But we find that the Malaysian consumers are incredibly educated on the quality diamonds and on larger quality diamonds. The luxury categories of jewelry in Malaysia put the upper, higher-end jewelry consumers, mm-hmm. In a competitive position with other international locations, so that these consumers are incredibly educated, because they'll go to Milan, you know, they'll go to Hong Kong, you know, they'll go to Paris, and they'll go to London to buy merchandise. And here in Dijem, in Malaysia, they don't have to go very far to buy and find a competitive, high-quality, unique piece of jewelry with the Lazada diamond in it. So, you know, our experience here is such that we are actually promoting the highest caliber quality of jewelry, mm-hmm. on an international scale through Dijem that competes on all other international levels.
Now, before ending, you know, besides jewelry, what other industries does Lazada contribute to?
Well, we actually do quite a few things in the back room through our chairman of the board, Mr. Maurice Templesman. And I mentioned in Africa, in every country that we actually have associations, we actually do private investments as well. So we'll do things, for example, whether it could be mining, it could be housing, it could be water projects. So Lazada is an international investor, mm-hmm. In other countries' benefits as well. So we think of ourselves as a really good partner. We also get involved in financing on an international basis through the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, which is an investment program developed by the United States government. And we just now finished a very large financial institution in Botswana.
Right.
And we will be doing the same things in Namibia and in other countries where we actually have investments in. So we like the idea of thinking ourselves as an international company that doesn't just do diamonds. Diamonds and the Lazada diamond is our focus in the luxury category, but we do other investments that are actually people-oriented.
That was Chelsea Rosario telling us all about Lazard Diamonds. Stay tuned because coming up next is Florence Song stylist at Zalora with her thoughts on a trend straight from the streets of London, Chelsea Boots. But before that, here's Shirley Bessie with Diamonds Are Forever. This is Stylefile and I'm Adeline Chung on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, it's Adeline Chung on Stylefile. Now, if you'd like to listen to us on the go, you can download our BFM app on Google Play or the App Store. And now, Florence Song's stylist at Zalora explains how you can comfortably style Chelsea boots under the Malaysian sun. And this week, it's all about Chelsea boots, tight-fitting ankle-high boots. Come on, Florence, give us your take.
I mean, Chelsea boots has always been around. It's not like, you know, a really, it's not a trend that came out of nowhere. And it's a trend that will always come around whenever, you know, the fall winter season comes back around. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, nothing screams fall more than, you know, a look that incorporates the usage of boots. But recently, Chelsea boots, the styles to kind of like sit up and pay attention to are more of like the cowboy and western styles. And also the animal print styles, for example, you know, snakeskin, leopard print, which are also trends in itself. From the runways itself, there are lots of cowboy-inspired Chelsea boots, for example, mm-hmm. like Isabel Moran with their silver-tipped Lemzy boots. It's a very Western-inspired pair that's defined by silver hardware at the pointed toe and also a Western-style plaque on the brand's signature stacked heel. And it was styled with everything from, you know, jeans to mini skirts on the runways. And if you look at Miu Miu's runway, they also did like, you know, a faded distressed leather kind of square-toed boots, which, you know, is really reminiscent of an actual cowboy boot.
Did you know that Queen Victoria used to wear them regularly?
Chelsea boots? Or
Chelsea boots.
Chelsea boots, no.
Yeah, even the Beatles, you know, had also worn a variant of Chelsea boots, you know, with higher heels. Mm-hmm. And even by its name Chelsea, you know, it has a strong association with England and London, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess people who wear Chelsea boots try to invoke that kind of look, you know? But then again, you know, as you mentioned, all the best runways that you've seen. So in Malaysia, I mean, we don't have that kind of perfect weather to actually wear Chelsea boots every day, right?
Yeah.
Although we have seen some, quite a few. But what do you think?
Well, the good thing about Chelsea boots is, it's, I would say on the boot spectrum, it's one of the easier styles to kind of wear over here compared to like, you know, the lace-up combat boots or, you know, the heavier boots. Because Chelsea boots, it's quite a slip-on and slip-off kind of style. I mean, you surely there are some with, you know, buckles and stuff, but pretty much it's low cut. It's not like a thigh-high boot. It's not like a knee-high boot. So it's something that you can still incorporate into your look. You know, I mean, it's hot here in Malaysia, but it doesn't have to be uncomfortable if you pair it with, you know, floaty fabrics, dresses, you know, lighter items.
So how would you pair it?
Well, flat Chelsea boots tend to lend themselves very well to boho dresses, you know, like floaty boho dresses, thanks to the vintage feel. So I'd say, you know, a combination of an oversized dress with, you know, chunkier boots feels really playful and daring. And if you're talking about cowboy boots, I mean, they can be a bit trickier to style. So avoid wearing them with other boldly Western pieces to avoid like looking like you're dressing up for Halloween. But, you know, pair it with, you know, polished sleek pieces, you know, like a well-tailored suit or an unexpected pretty dress like ruffled skirts or pink lace. Or, you know, you can just go back to basics with a simple tee and jeans formula.
So do you think that this is a trend to invest in or not?
Chelsea boots, like I mentioned, are pretty easy to wear. So, I mean, if you're looking for boots to incorporate into your outfit, it will definitely be a silhouette to invest in.
If you've missed any part of the show, catch up with the podcast on www.bfm.my/stylefile and give us some love on our Facebook page, Stylefile on BFM 89.9. Now you can catch the repeat of the show on Wednesdays at 9 p.m. or listen to us on the go if you're a busy bee by downloading our BFM app. It is available on Google Play and the App Store. If you want to be in touch with me, you can tweet me at BFM Radio or Adeline CSK. Oh, don't forget, we are also on Spotify. You can check out all the podcasts on Spotify as well. And as we all know, Spice Girls is back and I'm going to play you a song by them. It's called Stop Right Now. This has been Stylefile and I'm Adeline Chung on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.